It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A majority of college presidents don't think they'll be in their current job in 5 years. That's according to the American Council on Education survey of college presidents published last year.
These shifts in leadership hold true for Wisconsin. 9 of the 13 universities of Wisconsin chancellors assumed their post over the past 4 years.
A new book by a former UW Superior chancellor digs into why college leaders are vacating those powerful positions. The book profiles 7 presidents who stayed at their institutions and brought them through difficult times.
Terry McTaggart is co-author of The New College President, How a Generation of Diverse Leaders is Changing Higher Education. Terry, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Well, thank you, Kate. It's a great pleasure to be with you.
You say that the Great Recession has hit higher education as presidents of universities and colleges quit across the country. In the years since, why are college presidents leaving their positions?
Oh, it's a great question, Kate, and it's got a mysterious dimension to it, but it's also got a pretty clear one as well. The job has gotten a lot harder and less rewarding than it was, for example, when I first became a president a couple of decades ago. It's not what they bargained for. You know, it used to be the president was respected. They were kind of like an uncle in some ways to the students. And they presided over basically happy communities. A lot of that has changed. And, just looking at what happened to the 3 presidents when they appeared before Congress a little while ago, it's become a tough job. So the average presidency now is around 6 years when it used to be pushing 10.
You and your co-author, you did over 500 interviews with college presidents and the people who surround them, the faculty, the staff, students. During that decade of interviews, was there an aha moment that stands out to you that really set you on this journey of writing about 7 presidents in particular?
Well, that's absolutely true, Kate. And the aha moment was this. As we looked at unusual presidents, maybe they were unusual because the standard president when we started this thing was typically a white middle-aged male. The presidents we interviewed, including immigrants, their children, people with accents, people of color, just a real variety of people. But the aha moment was not their ethnic or national origin or even their sexual preference. It was, these people are good. These people are terrific leaders. And so that led Eileen and myself to say, what makes the difference? How come these folks are so effective? And these folks tend to stay the course. They're not the ones that leave early when the heat goes up. And it turns out, as part of those 500 or so interviews, we discovered that their early upbringing invariably was challenging. It was tough. Whether they were a minority or whether they were not, people that have known adversity early in life, overcame it, are much better when the going gets tough in their profession as a president or really any profession. So the Romans said ad astra per aspera, to the stars through difficulty. And that's why these folks were so good. They could handle the tough times.
They came with grit.
Absolutely.
I wonder, then, you also say courage is their dominant trait. Why do college presidents need so much courage?
The main reason is they're a target of criticism all the way around in ways that weren't the case before. For example, when I first got to UW Superior, my first presidency, I wasn't quite 40 years old at the time. And, I was kind of thinking, well, kind of half full of myself, probably, you know. And I struck up a conversation with a janitor about events of the day. And he said, Chancellor, everybody's got a right to complain. And it suddenly hit me that I wasn't such a big shot after all, and that the job was to be responsive both to the compliments when you got them, but also to the criticism when that came. And the ratio of attaboys and attagirls to I wish you'd do it differently or what were you thinking has changed dramatically in those intervening years. The job has just gotten less rewarding and more difficult, no other word. And so some presidents say, man, I can't wait till my five-year contract is up. I'll be out of here. But the kinds you want are those that are going to stick it out for the long term. I'm thinking of one of my successors at UW-Superior, current chancellor, Renee Wachter, been there for well over 10 years.
Yes.
Doing a great job because she's that kind of leader.
Despite the turnover of college presidents, you say there is an opportunity. What do you see happening that is positive here?
It's a paradox, to be sure. But this thing they called the Great Resignation, right? It's affected higher ed as these presidents, many of them leave their posts after a relatively short tour or duty. It's also happening through corporate America and governance at all. But that opens the door to hiring people who you may not have seriously considered in the past. For example, one of the people that we interviewed happened to be a woman of color, super well qualified, high marks from the best universities in the country. She interviews, gives it her best shot. And then somebody on the board who was on the search committee comes up to her and said, you know, you're only here for show. Mm. Don't forget that. Mm. So the people that we need to be searching out, recruiting, supporting, are those who come up from an adverse background and who were often overlooked, set aside, not taken seriously in the past. That's the opportunity. That's the reservoir of talent, as we like to say, we should be pulling up from.
So in that moment, with that anecdote, you're only here for a show, she was pulled aside and made a point that your application for this post is not being taken seriously. What are the threats that with that type of thinking on a college campus or that type of process in the hiring of a leader, what can that do to a college? How does that filter down?
Broadly speaking, the more diverse in terms of background, in terms of variety of experience, diverse in that broad sense you have on any team, the better off you are. Mm. If you don't have that, and you've got people that look the same, think the same, are unimaginative when it comes to addressing problems, then you don't really have your A team at work. So any board of trustees or search committee, depending on how it's handled, who sort of has blinders on and restricts themselves to what their preconceived idea of a president should be or should look like, is really doing a disservice to their school. You used the word grit earlier. Leaders today, they need to know the higher ed business, to be sure. They need to have a credible academic background, to be sure. But as much as anything else, they need to have grit, perseverance, resilience, savvy. Those traits are required more than ever.
We're talking about the challenges of leading colleges and universities, how campus leaders succeed. Terry McTaggart is co-author of the new book, The New College President. Terry, let's look more closely at some of these leaders that you profile. Reverend Jeffrey Bullock, President
Yes.
Emeritus of University of Dubuque, not too far here from Wisconsin, served as president for 25 years. Why did you highlight Reverend Bullock?
It's a great story, and he happens to be a great guy. Let me just tick off some of the things that he did. He came into the University of Dubuque. It's a private school, and it sounds like it might not be, but it's very much associated with the Presbyterian Church. Jeffrey came in, and the place was virtually bankrupt. They were thinking of selling off some of their property, hoping someone would open a Walmart next to the campus. Enrollments were down. Former president would go around begging for money and not having much luck. Jeffrey came in, and before long, they had a $250 million endowment. They had three times the enrollment than when he showed up. He really breathed new life into the school. Well, where did that strength of character come from? Where did the guts to say, I can turn this place around? It came in part because when he was 12 or 13, he was turned out of his home and had to make it. He and his brother, younger brother, had to make it on their own. So Jeffrey Bullock knew tough times from early on, And he was not a guy who, as he liked to say, losing is not part of my DNA. And he sure proved it at the University of Dubuque.
He also laid off faculty, 14 tenured faculty. Yep. You talk about he reduced majors from 40, about 40 majors, down to 15. And here at the UW, Regents voted to lay off 32 tenured UW-Milwaukee faculty. How should leaders balance the needs of a faculty, the tenure system, and the overall needs of the university and its budget?
Well, you put your finger on why this job has become so tough. Nobody likes firing people. And even if they have a soft landing and advance notice and that kind of thing, it still can be devastating to the individual. But the balancing part, as you ask, is what is best for the university? What will keep this a vital, balanced, wonderful place to learn? As a consequence even of having to let people go in order to have enough resources. It is not an easy choice or a friendly one, but it takes someone with courage and who can take the criticism. Part of the Jeffrey Bullock story, as you might have noted, is I think he had one board member volunteered to be with him, being shouted at. There were placards. There were, frankly, more serious threats than that. But he saw it through. He stayed the course. And Dubuque is, this, as we've described it, a shining city on a hill today, not a place that's looking to sell off their property to a Walmart.
A turnaround there. Let's now go to University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Robert Jones, another Midwestern university here. Robert Jones takes the helm 2016. What happens here with the leadership of Jones?
As you might imagine, with all the interviews we did with these people and around them, we became friends with them. And I would certainly say that applies to both Jeff and to Robert Jones. Let me mention what Robert has accomplished and then talk about where the strength of character came to help him do that. His two predecessors as head of University of Illinois were kind of forced out by scandals, and they weren't necessarily guilty in the scandals, but it was kind of collateral damage that made him leave. This place was demoralized. One of the people we interviewed said, this place was a hot mess, Terry, when Robert showed up. It wasn't long before the same people who said it was a hot mess are saying, we knew we'd be okay with Robert in charge. Hmm. Fundraising, reestablishing the credibility of the university, whole host of things that he has accomplished. Well, where did the internal resources, the character, the strengths of character come from that? He was raised in a sharecropper's shack. The shack has been destroyed now, but I did visit the plot of land where that shack was. He and his mother and his sister would pick cotton on somebody else's property. He was threatened with a shotgun blast growing up in rural Georgia. Well, I tell you, a man who's been through those kinds of dangers and met those kinds of challenges, he's ready for what higher education or even Illinois can toss at him. So Robert Jones he was a brilliant plant scientist. He was a friend of Desmond Tutu. He's a really brilliant, highly accomplished guy. But it all began in a sharecropper's shack where he learned the hard way how important it was to learn, get an education, and not say no to yourself.
After the murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer in 2020, college leaders all over the country issue statements and they make commitments to take action to address racial and economic injustices in higher ed. You said Jones demonstrated sensitivity and courage in this moment. What did he do?
Instead of just talking, you're right. He put in place, he hired the right people and put in place very active programs to make minority students, people of color, poor white students, people who ordinarily might not think about going to a great university like Illinois, making them feel welcome and helping them to succeed. He himself personally had a tough time at the University of Georgia, where he got his master's degree. He was among the first African-American students to come there after the court ordered desegregation, and he didn't feel welcome. Well, he was going to make darn sure that at the University of Illinois, that students, whatever their background, were going to feel welcome. So he's really kind of the avatar of the message we're sending, that very often candidates from non-traditional, diverse backgrounds have just the strengths that presidents need in this time of disruption and opposition.
You talk about, in the book, Mary Dana Hinton, the president, former president of the College of St. Benedict in Minnesota, leading Hollins University in Virginia, who faced poverty, racism, stereotypes. And you say that Hinton has a superpower in helping people be seen and heard, and that she leads with love. Can you describe what that is like?
When you first meet Mary Hinton and begin talking with her, you know you're talking to somebody special. She had grew up in a poor part of a very poor state as well. She was frankly picked on, bullied, and in spite of that, she has emerged not just as a very bright woman who's very well educated at this point, but she knows the value, and there's no other word for it, the value of love, the value of support, of empathy, sympathy, of caring about others. Like so many of these presidents, not only are they remarkable human beings, but they're awful good at their jobs. The largest gift that college has ever received, $50 million at one time, Mary brought that in. So she knows the art of being a president, but she certainly has the heart of a president as well.
You recommend that a forensic approach to executive recruitment be taken when you're hiring a president. What does that entail?
Well, we picked that word, Kate, forensic, to signal that the searchers need to go deeper into the background of candidates, and not just see what offices they've held or what scholarships they received or how many grants they got, but how do they handle disappointment? How do they handle failures? If they make a mistake, how do they recover from it, to get at the deeper than just what you see ordinarily in an academic resume, and find what makes this person tick, and things like, can they take a punch? How do they behave if they get a negative editorial in the paper or there's a student demonstration outside of their offices? That's what we meant by forensic. And in the book, we present a kind of step-by-step approach to both finding out more about the candidates and being smarter about the kind of leadership your institution needs at this moment when many of them are at least somewhat beleaguered.
Well, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us, Terry. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Kate. It's a treat to be kind of vicariously in touch with Wisconsin again. Thank you very much.
That is Terry McTaggart, former chancellor of UW-Superior. The book is called The New College President, and he co-authored it with Eileen Wilson O'Learian, president emerita of Kalamazoo College in Michigan.
Coming up, a 74-year-old runner from Hobart ran his 2,000th marathon in Wautoma on Saturday. Find out how he got started.
Well, I was in a reserve unit, and a few of them decided that they were going to run a marathon, saying, well, hey, we got to run so much anyway, being in the reserves. And so that's where I got my first one out of Chicago.
That's coming up here on Wisconsin Today.